Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It is the IT Babble podcast, April 24th, episode 213. Tony, the weather in Indiana this weekend was simply divine. It was fantastic. Fantastic. Oh, 70s and 80s, sunshine, nice breeze. It was glorious. It was glorious.
Did you go outside or just watch it from the window?
Oh, we were outside quite a bit playing with the dog. I mowed the yard for the first time this year. I went on a bike ride. Oh, God, Tony, the first time I've ridden a bike in, I don't know, over a decade. Oh, so I jogged, like to work out, but when I rode this bike, oh my gosh, my legs were in such pain.
Where'd you get this bike?
So there was a teacher who is retiring, and she had bought the bike, but maybe like a couple months after she bought it, she had knee replacement surgery. Mm. And so she's like, I've only ridden it like two or three times and it's a pretty nice bike. And she gave me a great deal on it. So I was like, you know what? Yeah, I could have a bike. Jennifer and I, my wife can just like share it. And like, if we're taking the kids to like a nearby park or something, it'd be a good way to get there rather than just walking. So kind of something fun. And boy, man, ooh, pain.
Yeah. Ooh. If you haven't ridden in a while.
Yeah, I don't know how people like ride to work. I guess I do. They're just in shape and they've ridden bikes for a while and they're okay. And I rode a lot as a kid, you know, obviously, but that was years and years and years ago. But holy smokes, my legs were on fire, just burning.
Yeah, the weather was really good here. I've been outside almost for two whole days, basically. So nice. I've got quite a big lawn and I had to do lots of mowing and trimming and did a little excavating in the back because I saw some weird stuff in the dirt.
Okay.
Had to dig some stuff up and So I've been out pretty much like all day, both days. And then my son loves to play outside. So he just wanted to stay outside and play.
Heck yeah, that's good. Yeah, my kids were normally like to be inside, but boy, they were outside for hours this weekend, which is great, which is good. So, man, it was good. But for those people who know Midwestern weather, it shall not last. It's spring is usually an awful, a frustrating time. So our high tomorrow is in the upper 50s. So we went from 85 degrees on Saturday to 57 degrees on Monday. 80 degrees today to 57 degrees tomorrow, low in the 30s. And it's just how it is here in the Midwest, in Ohio, Indiana, Iowa, Michigan. Yeah, just kind of stinky spring weather, but that's okay. It's a peak of what's to come on a regular basis. That's what's great. That's what's great.
That's right.
That's right. So are you ready to play our favorite game?
I am. Do it.
What am I drinking?
What am I drinking? That's a caps lock. I don't want that on there. I don't want to put a period there. Okay. Tony, I'm going to start tonight. I am drinking Bell's Oberon Ale. It's a wheat ale. It's
a nice one.
It is. Yeah. It's very popular. I'd say it's one of their more popular ones. And, it's very light. It's a good beer to have on a sunny summer day kind of a thing. It's really good. It's a little bit hazy, but, it is just delicious.
Okay. So I'm drinking Sam Adams Summer Ale, but it's not normal. So I don't think it's normal. I'm just opening up to confirm and I'll put the link in.
Okay.
But, it's one of my favorite beers, but it does have a kind of a high like sugar content, so I don't drink too many of them because they'll give me a headache. But I do like them. And anyone who goes there and decides to go for the summer ale. I recommend it in a glass. It's better in a glass. So
Yeah.
I'm just trying to look here. Maybe they just have one. Maybe this just says something different on the. Oh yeah, it's just the same one. It's a normal one.
Okay.
The summer ale.
Nice.
Yep.
Well, that is
citrus. It's a citrus sweet.
Yes, and oftentimes served with a wedge of orange, or lemon, or some sort of citrus. It's very
and
common.
A funny story. It's one of my wife's favorite beers, and I bought a case of it, 24 bottles of it, for our wedding in Kentucky. And at the time, in my county, it was dry. I'm not going to get into it, but you had to bring your own alcohol in. And so we had the goal. We were on like kind of a little road trip after the wedding. So I bought like a case, and we had like a few at the wedding. That was it. And then the next day, all of it was gone because my brother drank all of it overnight between the end of the wedding and the next day, where he had gone out to the lake with some of the wedding guests, and he shared it with some people, but he like took it as his own beer and shared it.
That's not very cool.
Yeah. And my wife was like, I can't believe your brother drank all of my wedding beer. Yep.
Oh man.
So there you go.
Fantastic.
And my brother will say, stop talking about that. I said, I'm sorry. It was years ago.
Oh, some trespasses do not heal. You know, they just don't.
It's like the Lord's prayer, but you add in the middle. But do not forgive JD for taking the wedding beer. What? That's the only thing.
All right. Okay. So we've got a good show. I've got a rant about Samsung Chromebooks. We normally don't. We normally don't call out like individual companies or products or anything, but I'm going to do it this time. I'm going to do it this time.
I don't know if you should, because you're the one that told me to buy them, and I bought a bunch last year. So
I'll tell you what's happened here.
Come on, Patrick. What do I have to do now?
Tony, you've got
my reputation's on the line.
I'll talk about what I like and what I don't like. You got something on there, holograms. Okay. I can't wait to get into that.
Yeah, don't read the little thing afterwards.
I won't.
Leave it at holograms.
You got build a Steam lab in a normal room. Don't sweat the big stuff. I think that's going to be really interesting for people. But I think we'll start off with Chrome OS Flex. Tony, we tried it. We actually put it on an old MacBook. We did it.
So you put it on like an Intel MacBook, right?
That's right, an Intel MacBook. Yep. So they want you to like give some like contact information. I don't know why. You don't need to. You can totally bypass that page. But when you go to Chrome OS Flex, like the link I have in the show notes, you can bypass that. You don't have to do that. If you go to my post on IT Babble, there is a link of where you can just go right to it and just get it. So yeah, anyway, we had a teacher who wanted a Chromebook for one of her students, an elementary school teacher. And we it's end of the year. We don't have a lot of Chromebooks to spare. We kind of were like, hey, we got this MacBook Air sitting around that's like 8 years old. The battery on it's not great, but it'll last like hour and a half. So we decided just to do that. So I got a USB. It has to be 8 gigabytes or larger. You download an extension, which is kind of weird, a Chrome OS recovery extension. Plug in the flash drive, run this extension. You have to do some settings there. Again, read my post in IT Babble. It'll tell you, it'll give you the instructions. It was very straightforward. It took about 15 minutes to format the USB and to make it into an installation. But then when we put it into the Mac, Tony, guess how long it took to install Chrome OS on this MacBook Air?
4 days.
It took, I don't know, maybe about a minute to minute and a half. It was incredibly fast.
Whoa, that's super fast.
Super fast. I was not expecting it. I was not expecting it. Like, I thought it was going to take, you know, 30 minutes or something like that. No, it was like a minute and a half. Just, and we haven't, and as soon, you know, it reboots and all of a sudden it's a Chromebook. For people out there, you have to understand that this is not Chrome OS running next to Mac OS or inside Mac OS. This replaces Mac OS.
Whoa.
For Chrome OS. So, you know, this isn't, you can always reinstall Mac OS, but you'll need an installer USB like we did. And you definitely easy to do, but it'll take a little bit of more time. But yeah, it was a Chrome OS. And if we had a spare license, we could have enrolled it into our management system. And monitored it from there, but we didn't, but it's okay because it's just one person using it, one child using it, like, I don't know, a couple times a week. It never leaves the room, so I'm feeling okay about it. But yeah, it worked. It worked fine. We haven't tested deeply, like, will the speakers work with no problem? Does it work with a microphone for dictation or the webcam or anything? We haven't tested deeply about that stuff, but it works. It's fast. It's, you know, it's just like, you know, Chrome. It's just very speedy. Well, Chrome's not super speedy, but Chrome OS is. Yeah, I was kind of impressed.
Yeah, I think that would be a good application on, like, Windows computers that we might want to recycle out. They'd yeah. probably be great for Chrome OS.
Yeah.
If we can get it to work.
Yeah, there is a one thing that did surprise me is that there is a list that Google has put out there of these are the computers you can put it on. Now, we're going to try to put it on a computer that's not on that list. We have those 11-inch MacBook Airs. They are not on that list, but we're going to give it a try anyway. We're figuring, why not? You know, those things are getting really... We're having all sorts of issues with them. Battery failures, super slow, just locking up, restarts. So yeah, we're just going to give it a try. But I think this could be a way to kind of stretch these computers out even further. Because the MacBooks we have laying around can't even update to the latest OS anymore. So they are definitely need something to help them out. So, but it was pretty cool. It was very easy. One thing that was weird, though, and Tony, I don't know if this is right. So we did the installer, and they're like, oh, if you want to install, if you want to do another Chromebook, another MacBook, or you have to recreate the installer USB.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of makes sense, because you're going to have to, the format for the hard drive is different for the operating system.
Oh, okay.
So they use different drive formatting, and they're going to use different type of boot record, I think. So yeah, you would have to have a USB installer for the Mac.
Okay.
But you know what? It's pretty handy to have those all the time. Like we have a couple. If your Apple's super old, but it will take the newest version of the OS and you need to upgrade it, but you've skipped like two or three major upgrades, you're going to have a lot of initial failure trying to just use the App Store upgrade. There's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
Basically, this is what happens. Apple wants you to have an empty hard drive. That's when it's like, you need it'll, this is what happens every single time. You need 8 gigs and so you'll look at it like, oh, yeah, 20 gigs free. You start to install it, and then it'll start patching itself, downloading, patching, down. And it's like, wait, I thought this one download would do it all. And it's like, no, see, you've got to patch it a few times before the download will take. So by the time that you get through a couple of the, like, auto patches,
Now you need another 8 gigs. So you actually needed 16.
Oh.
And then you're like, okay, I had 20, but it's like, but we need to run the installer and that needs like 4 gigs. So you're out of space. There's all these different things that come up if your computer's super old. So if you're more than 2 full versions back, like 2 operating system names back, if you get the offline installer for the newest one, it'll update off a USB or SD card like immediately. It's easy. So that's what we do for older computers. But I want to try this out on older Windows laptops because we do get some back. And, you know, I just old hardware, for some reason, even if you reinstall Windows 10 on it, it's like it can't run it, even though it was just running it. I know why, but like it's just frustrating. So it'd be good to take that and put Chrome OS on it because and use it like even just for loaner computers, because we use working Chromebooks for Chromebook loaners when they're getting repaired. I'd rather use some like Windows computers we've marked for recycling and just put Chrome OS on them.
Perfect. One thing to know is that this is, it's don't go and just like wipe your fleet of Windows or Mac computers out there, people. This thing is pretty experimental. Who knows how well it's going to work? Is it going to receive regular updates? I don't know.
I think you should wipe. Go in on Monday. Go office to office and just start wiping all the Windows computers. Just no, do it and say no. This is the future.
No, we don't have too many Windows users at our school.
This is what you do. You erase the computer. You just, people look at you and go, what are you doing? And you just look at them and say, Elon, and you just walk out. You just Elon. Say Elon.
Elon.
I love it. And they're like, whoa.
It must be good. It must be good.
It would be kind of cool if we could rebrand the Chrome OS to say Tesla OS, and then nobody would argue.
No, nobody would. People are like, I do want a Tesla OS. I do want one of those.
If you get this, and when you get the car, it'll be easier. Now, that doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't need to make sense.
But a lot of people would be like, oh, yeah. Yeah. This is it. This is what we need.
This is the future. Now. The future now. All right. So it's pretty cool. But check it out. And you don't need to be a school to do this either. You can just be anybody. Anybody can do this. Anybody can throw Chrome OS on an old computer. And Chrome OS is getting really, 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 really good. So very stable. Very. If you got a Google account, if you don't use Google, Chrome OS is not very good. But all right. Transitioning from Chrome OS to Chromebooks, which run Chrome OS. Tony, Samsung. Oh.
Go ahead. Give me the bad news, Patrick.
Okay. So first, the Samsung Chromebook 4s are great. They look great. The keyboards are solid. The trackpads are solid. The webcam is actually HD. I think it's 720p. It's a nice webcam. Their bright speakers are crap, but there's a Chromebook. Speakers are going to be crap. It's got a good amount of ports. It's good. It's good, and you can find parts for them. Everything is good. This year, starting around December, we started getting students coming in, and they're like, my Chromebook won't charge. And when we plug in the Chromebook, the lights cycle. So it'll be like green, red, blue, green, red, and they just kind of cycle through, and it will not charge. So we opened it up, disconnected the battery, reconnected the battery, and then some of them did start to charge, but they would come back a few days later with this whole cycling thing, and disconnecting and reconnecting the battery didn't work. So we didn't think too much of it because it was just like 2 or 3 students. And, you know, they're computers. Sometimes computers just are bad. Sometimes they're just lemons. So we had some loaners, we swapped out the batteries, and that fixed the problem. In January, between January and February, we had like another 7 students come in with this exact same problem. So I reached.
You don't even have that many kids in total. So that's.
No, we're well over 10%.
I'm not saying that Patrick's school doesn't have good enrollment. It's just not a huge school. No. So seven out of a fleet is actually way, way too many.
Yeah, out of a fleet of, say, 80, you know. And when you had, anyway, we were around 15% of these, of our Chromebooks. This particular Chromebook was having this battery issue. So I'm on a listserv for Indiana educators, and I said, hey, does anybody have the contact information for a Samsung rep for our region? You know, sometimes some companies have reps for Indiana, some companies have reps for like the Midwest. Nothing. Nobody got back to me. This is a very active, very, very strong community. So I was like, I got to reach out to Samsung somehow. So I finally get a hold of somebody. Yeah. So I try to chat with somebody and they're like, oh, nobody's available to chat with. Would you like us to call you? So I'm like, yeah, please call me. Come on, call me tomorrow morning. And they're like, great, it's scheduled. So I get there, I get a phone call. I pick it up and it goes, hi, this is your scheduled Samsung call. Unfortunately, our call centers aren't open yet. So they let me schedule a phone call when their call centers weren't open. And then it called me and told me that. It was fantastic.
You agreed to a scheduled call, Patrick, not to actually speak to anybody.
I know.
Hey, you need to get in. This is the Microsoft game. They're playing it. They're playing a Microsoft game.
So I finally get a hold of somebody on chat, and they reach out and actually call me.
Well, that's cool.
It is. And I'm like, here's the issue. And they're like, have you tried this? Power washing. I was like, yes. Have you tried other chargers? Yeah, I know. I don't know why.
If somebody asked me that, I'd be like, you really just asked me if I've tried power washing your Chromebook? Well, that is the first thing you do.
Here's the thing. Like, because these Chromebooks are dead and they won't hold a charge, even when they're plugged in, I can't power wash them. So I was like, we couldn't. We tried other chargers, generic, other brands. We had the exact same result. And so eventually she's like, okay, you know, I'm going to create a ticket. You need to send them to us. We're not going to send you a box or anything, which is fine, but we'll send you labels so you don't have to pay for shipping. And I'm like, great. That's fine. So I gather up all these Chromebooks and I put them in boxes, slapped a label on them, and I send them off. And, you know, it takes about 3 days to get there. So they got there. Mm. They're like, we received it. I was like, great. And then a few days after that, they're like, we're like, here's a breakdown on each one of your Chromebooks. And it had the serial number and a breakdown of what was wrong. And a lot of them was like battery failure, battery failure, battery failure. And so I chatted with my representative and I said, hey, there's all these battery failures. And they're like, oh yeah, there's nothing we can do about that. Sometimes there's just bad computers. I was like, but not to this scale. But they wouldn't engage in that. And so here's the thing, Tony. Here's what really, really got my goat. So they're like, okay, we'll replace the battery. The battery will cost this much. Like, everything was itemized. I really appreciate that. And the battery price was fair. And they're like, okay, just to open up the Chromebook was $90.
Whoa.
So for those of you, I mean, this is a $250 computer. So they're talking $90 just to take the back off of it. And then another $50, I think it was like $40, $45 to replace the battery. So we're up to $135. And then here is the insult. They're like, oh yeah, you have to pay $25 shipping per computer to ship them back.
What?
Yeah, so now we're at $160. We're almost at the cost of a brand new Chromebook. We're getting really close to the cost of a brand new Chromebook. When I can source these batteries myself and I can replace them. And then some people like had like cracked the base had a crack in it. They're like, "Oh, we're going to replace the base too." Or the USB port is acting funny. So we're going to replace the USB port. And he's like, "Ah, oh, no, I can do a lot of this myself. I don't need." So I said, what if you don't repair them? They're like, oh, we'll send them back to you for free. We'll pay the shipping. And I was like, all right, send them back to me, please. So, but because of COVID, supply chains, which we've talked about, I've got to wait for the batteries. The batteries should be here at the end of next week, but I mean, these kids have been without a computer for, you know, they've had a loaner for months now, and it's just, so far we haven't seen any new issues. It's just these, like, you know, seven computers, and hopefully it stays that way, but just the customer support and the customer experience was with Samsung was very lacking, and it's making us reconsider, like, we were going to buy Samsung Chromebook 4s this year for our incoming fifth graders, but I don't know if we're going to do that now. I think we're looking at other ones, Dells, HPs.
Actually reading about this. So this problem goes back to 2018 at least, and it impacts their Windows computers too.
Really? What?
Yep.
Man,
it's exactly as you described it. Lights blinking, everything.
Oh,
there's a whole thread on. There's multiple threads actually on Reddit about it.
Man, we had the Chromebook 3s and they were fantastic. Like outside of a broken screen, outside of user damage, we've had very few faults.
The ones that we've had ours for a year since you recommended them, and they haven't had any issues.
Yeah, the Chromebook 4s have been really solid. And they're very easy to repair, easier than HPs. I don't know. So.
Somebody alluded to something, and I know you probably may have checked this, but the AC adapters for these laptops, do you have the AC adapter that the students had for their laptop, or are you using one in-house? Did they bring their power supply with them when they gave them to you for repair?
I'm glad you asked that. So if you bought your Chromebook 4s and for the 2020-2021 school year, they came with there was a brick, a solid brick, which plugs directly into the wall, and then there's a USB-C at the end. And it was all contained. You couldn't take the USB out of the brick. Those are fine. We've had no problems with those. For the 2021-2022 school year, the brick is like Apple, it's a block, but then you plug a USB-C cable into the block. You know what I'm talking about? And so you have a block and a USB-C cable, and you plug each end, one into the block, one into the computer, and it charges. We've had a bit of issues with those. The bricks have failed. The cables are fine, but the bricks fail. So what we do is we give the cable to the student, and we just give them a generic charger, which you can buy for about $15 on Amazon. Or really anywhere, probably even cheaper from Newegg or Tiger Direct or something. But
it seems like charging bricks may have been problematic and actually messed up the motherboard and the batteries.
It may have been on the repair. There was only one student who needed a motherboard repair. They're like, they're like water damage.
When you get the batteries in, what I'm saying is. You should swap out the power chargers with something else.
Oh, that's not a bad
idea. Swap out the AC adapters. Because if the AC adapters cause the problem, then, you know, they're fairly cheap. It's better to just eliminate them. Just get rid of them. Just throw them out and replace them.
That's a great idea. I think that's exactly what we'll do. We just bought 10 generic AC adapters.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I was just looking at this Reddit thread, and somebody said that they noticed that the AC adapter that came with the computer was heating up and cooling down, heating up and cooling down. That doesn't make sense.
Oh, no, it doesn't. No.
And then their computer cycled into it wouldn't power anymore, and it had the lights and everything.
So what it sounds like is that the brick was sending surges of electricity and then just nothing, and then surges of electricity and then nothing.
Anyway, that an extra suggestion since you've already gone through so much pain.
That's great. Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic. And you know what? AC adapters are a heck of a lot cheaper than batteries. So the batteries for the Chromebook 4, they normally should run $35 to $40. Right now, they're running anywhere between $50 to $70 just because of supply chains, COVID, and maybe because of this problem. It's probably exasperating it a little bit as well, where people are replacing them. But they're very easy to replace. And I got a, if anybody's curious, I've got a good vendor. I've got a really good vendor, and I'm happy to put you in contact with them. Just email me or leave a comment on my post about Chrome OS Flex or something like that. I get a notification, so, and I will reach out to you and give you that person's name. You don't want to go to their website, because their website, the prices are elevated, because if you're a school, they will give you a significant discount on parts. And you, every time they give me a price, it cannot be beaten anywhere. I can't find any place that can beat it. So anyway, there you go. All right, Tony.
And if you bought Samsung Chromebooks because Patrick told you to last year, also email him.
No, don't.
Let him know how you feel.
Don't.
Let him know how you feel.
I really like the Chromebooks. I really like the Chromebook 4s from Samsung. I really do. And I like how they don't release a new Chromebook every year. Like, the Chromebook 4 is going to be it for like the next 2 or 3 years. And then they'll have a Chromebook 5, which is great. Whereas Dell and HP, they're just repackaging the exact same Chromebook.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, anyway. All right, Tony.
Are you ready? Are you ready for my sweet topic?
I am.
Let me read the topic as it is in the notes for the listeners.
All right.
Holograms, only $50,000. So I'm on LinkedIn, and it's actually the only social media I use where I engage with people. Any other social media I use, I'm just posting stuff and then shutting it off. And so people always, especially salespeople, are always like contacting you. And this lady contacted me, and her company sells holograms, like holographic technology. So, you know, she's got a demo on her profile. So I looked at it. I mean, it's amazing. Okay. I'm not even going to mess around. I'm not going to criticize it. It's amazing. Like,
What company is this?
What I'm going to tell everybody right now is this: don't invest any money in VR hardware. It's just a waste of time. Okay. So they had this, her company has active holograms, for business, and they can set this thing up and your models or whatever you're doing just come up and you can use your hands to manipulate them, you know, like Iron Man. And that's what we're talking about. So she messages me and she's like, you know, I'd like to know if maybe we could touch base and see if, you know, there's a project we can work on together. And I was like, okay, what is my minimum buy-in to get into the hologram business? She's like, minimum buy-in is about $50,000.
Oh.
That's not including, right, at setting it up, like power, everything else, like a room for it. And I'm like, I don't think a small independent school can really handle $50,000 for like a technology project that only one person can use at a time. And maybe more than one person, but definitely not a classroom of 18 or 15 or 20. You know, it's just not going to happen. So I just wanted everyone to know that if you want to get into holograms today, holographic technology, so like think of all the stuff you do in VR, but it's in front of you and you can walk around it, manipulate it with your body like Iron Man, you need $50,000 to get started. So let's just call that 70. And but I was thinking about it, and if we apply normal kind of technology scale and pricing, if it gains a little bit of popularity, just a little bit with some big companies, I'd say in 5 to 7 years, you're probably at the, you know, $15,000 to $20,000 investment range, and 7 to 10 years, probably more like, it'll be probably a big jump. So probably like $5,000 to $8,000. So just, you know, it's cool. So if you really just, if you need VR to accomplish goals right now, that's fine. But if not, you know, if you're getting into VR just because it's cool and you don't really have a good reason to use it, I would just wait and monitor this kind of stuff. And I don't know if it's going to be, you know, this type of holographic system or another, but it's what everyone's working on. Everyone's working on no goggles, augmented reality, maybe with like some kind of transparent eyewear. But generally, the problem is people wear glasses, they have LASIK surgery, and they have contacts. Like, there's a lot of people that don't have perfect vision. And yeah. I'm telling you, I've used multiple VR headsets because I think they're cool. And I try to do a little demo. I actually try once a year for about a week to see where VR is at. So I'll get a demo and work on it. And I still can't find a headset, or even I've used the HoloLens, and I can't handle it for more than 15 or 20 minutes. It's just too uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So nobody really believes that that is the future. I don't think. No, I think people believe it's the interactive space that your body just naturally interacts with.
Yeah, and for people out there who are like, "Oh, Apple's going to solve this," no, they can't. They can't. Everybody's eyes are so different. Like, I don't wear glasses, but there is a difference between my right and my left eye. Like, and how do you adjust for that on a headset that's meant to be worn by millions of people? It just,
come on, Patrick. Didn't you see Ready Player One? It's just there. Okay. It just works. It's just going to work.
It's just going to work. You just have to, you just put it on. It works.
Oh, look, here this is a pretty simple thing for people to understand. All the technology that's going to work comes from people who are obsessed with something that they watched as a child, and they either watched Star Trek and they went into the holodeck.
The holodeck, yeah.
Or they watched Star Wars and they loved the little holograms that got beamed around everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody was wearing headsets in Star Wars or Star Trek.
No.
So that's it. So you're either one or the other or both, and that's what you want.
No, the only thing for VR right now is gaming because it can be so immersive. But the problem with VR headset and gaming and is your field of vision is not what your real field of vision is. It's like you're wearing blinders on your right and left.
And it's the same with the HoloLens. The HoloLens is a very cool concept because you can see the room while you have it on.
Yeah.
But as you move your head around, the menu and stuff doesn't track naturally. And like, you can lose the menu.
Oh,
like,
wow.
You gotta look up and around the room, and it's just, you know, it's not, there's no gain in speed really or efficiency. Like I've seen a few decent applications, but nothing that would be like, hey, let's invest, you know, what would it be like $2,000 or $3,000 per user minimum to have like a really good experience. I know some people are like, no, Tony, you can go classroom VR. I understand. I've seen classroom VR. I'm not going to say it's bad if you're using it, but it's nothing like this. It's nothing like a space that is immersive around you. There's nothing like that.
And Microsoft actually has, well, hold on here. I got to be very careful here.
They've got the room, right? That they've been working on.
They have. Oh gosh. Well, hold on here. No, not HoloLens. Microsoft Mesh. That's what it is.
Mesh.
But you don't, I mean, and it's like you have some people who they made a demo video of people like working on something, and some people are like a digital avatar, some people are wearing HoloLens, some people aren't wearing HoloLens, but yet they're interacting with the and it's just, I don't know. Like, it's just how is that going to work? Like,
and then back to my theory about obsession and a transition point here. There are two standard kinds of 3D printers that are safe to bring into a school. There's your normal 3D printer where you've got solid filament and it feeds into the machine.
Yep.
And then there's something called an SLA printer, which uses a liquid.
Oh, okay.
And there's, from the liquid type, there's another type of 3D printer, which isn't, I don't think, I'll have to check, still not as accessible for schools. And it literally, there's a like a pool of liquid, and using like, I think it's using lasers and electromagnetics, it shapes the object. Think about this, Patrick. shapes the object in the liquid and draws it up out of the liquid fully formed because the guy invented it, loved Terminator 2. And he's on record saying that. Okay, it's the same thing. The guy was like, that's what I want to do when I grow up. I want to freaking make a robot out of liquid like Terminator 2. And that's what he invented. Just like the people who are inventing holographic systems and stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Pretty cool. All right.
My next topic and last topic, STEM lab. So this came up in a discussion. Someone was like, it's too expensive. Like that. This is what happened. Someone at my school went on a tour of another school that had an awesome like STEM maker space. And they had big tools, like heavy stuff, like cutting machines and whatever. And we were talking about it, and they're like, you know, we just don't have a space for that. We have older buildings, and it's really expensive. And I'm like, you don't need any of that to have, like, a good prototyping lab and to do the learning that you need to do. And if you've got some students who are really excelling and they've got a good prototype of something, you can go to a manufacturing facility with your models and use their big machines. You can give them to their people, pay a very nominal fee, usually, especially for your school. And they will have professionals cut it out in like large sections. If you want to go from a small model to something big, and they can do it faster and they can do it cheaper because they're doing it like in an industrial scale. You're like somebody going into Home Depot asking for the leftover wood.
Yeah.
So you don't have to, and that's not an exaggeration, and I have done that before for that very reason. But it is hard. I mean, it's hard to retrofit a building to have like a massive, like computer controlled saw machine that like saws plywood. I mean, it's hard and it's dangerous. So I wanted to throw out a list, and he can post this on IT Babble, and yep. I'm not going to go through everything. I'm just going to go through some core concepts. I've done this before. I've done this twice, and I felt like it worked and people could come in and actually start using the stuff pretty quickly. In a school, let's say, of between 300 and 600 high school students. So high school students, that's our target size. Okay. So you scale that up based off what I'm saying. So if you have 1,200 students in middle and high school, double it. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
All right. So you need at least 4 3D printers, just normal ones. SLA printers are cool. If you want to get into them, it's fine with the liquid. They usually need a curing oven, which is really just ultraviolet oven. But they're kind of fumey. So I don't know. I don't have a lot of experience with them. I really want to get one because they can make models differently, but I just don't have a lot of experience. I have a lot of experience saying we can't buy one because we don't have ventilation. So 4 3D printers. Why 4? Because one is always broken and you need 3. So that's it. Okay. That is the reason. You are always going to be fixing a 3D printer. It's always going to be clogged. There's going to be one that's clogged. I recommend these brands. Sendo, Dremel, and MakerBot. And I won't get into why, but I just recommend those three brands. They have educational pricing and they have good materials.
Okay.
You need one laser cutter that has a built-in air cleaning system so you don't need ventilation, and that makes it kind of portable. I currently would say the Glowforge Pro with the air cleaner attachment.
Yeah.
You can use it in any room. It works fast. They're very professional. The support's good. And the Pro has a fixed width but unlimited length. So you can feed a massive piece of material in, a very long piece.
Nice.
And so it'll pull it through almost like a printer.
I'm just going to jump real quick in here. The Pro, well, all the Glowforges, if you put it next to a window, you can vent it safely out of a window.
You can.
Yeah.
And we do have ours close to a window, but the air filter system works. Like, it's portable and it works.
Mm-hmm.
And you only need one of those. Yeah. They're really fast. So 3D printers are slow. Laser cutters are fast.
Okay.
You need 2 Dremel hand saws, and only 2, and you keep them locked up. If you need to do any sawing, Dremel makes these nice,
these nice like carbon handsaws. They're very good for soft materials and hard materials. Nothing super thick, but they're great for inside work. One general toolbox with lots of common tools. I'm not going to break all that down.
Yeah.
And then you got to plan your tables. So if you've got six tables, then I put a breakdown in of things that need to be at each table, and I'm not going to go through all of those. But the main thing about the tables, and I put art style tables in the description, they need to be as square as possible. Okay, so you want depth on the table, not length. So you want a deep middle. It's very important. And that way you can put all kinds of things on them and push them towards the middle as they're getting finished. And when things are finished, they can sit in the middle. If you have a bunch of students working, they're going to need to work in stages. And long tables seem okay, but what I find with long tables is things get pushed to the edge too often and they can fall. And kids can be working on models and buildings and stuff for a long time. And you're trying to leave things in place while they're built. You don't want things to be moved. If you don't do that, you end up having to have a massive cleanup at the end of each kind of building process. And it's very hard for multiple classes to share the same tables without one class cleaning up. And what I always hear from people is we don't have enough time to do this kind of work because of the cleanup. So you need to try to minimize the cleanup. Get the cleanup down to like cleaning up dust and debris. And if you have tables that are deep, when a team or a group of kids, when they're done with their model for the day, they push it to the middle. The other kids come in, they pull theirs back from the middle. So you're not moving stuff from like table to shelf all the time. So you just want something that's as deep as possible. And then I recommend also getting robotics kits. I don't care what kind you get. Just get some robotics kits. I say two per table. If you have six, get 12. When those come in, you break them out into parts instead of just in the kits. And you can build robots and do robotics activities, or you can use the parts, the motors, the computers, and everything for other things. So it gives you a lot of flexibility because the goal isn't for you to tell the kids what to build. It's to give them the tools to build stuff. So all in, like, this isn't free, but it also can be, this kind of arrangement can be set up in an existing room. So you're not building the room. So like a normal, like probably art room would work or something like that, or a science lab is great. Like a room that was built for science, but currently isn't being used for science. Usually perfect, has everything that you need.
All right. I like this.
Yeah. So that's it.
This has always been a question of like, where do you start? Like what do you get in there and what do you put in there? And cause I've seen those rooms that have like the professional laser cutter in there. Like I talked to a school and they're like, yeah, we just got a new laser cutter and we have three stories in our school and we had to build ventilation. It's like through out of the roof. So we had to put a ventilation shaft three stories to do this.
If you put a professional laser cutter in that can cut, you know, like an inch or probably like an inch and a half or thicker. I forget what it's basically based on wattage and like how thick of a material they can cut. And if you put a big laser cutter in, it generates a ton of heat and a ton of fumes. And they're not as safe as the Glowforge. It is a laser that cuts.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to stare at it. Like you got to maintain it. So the big ones are nice, but the big ones are significantly more than a Glowforge.
Oh yes. Yes. You're tens of thousands of dollars.
I did something really dumb once. I purchased, a Roland CNC machine. So it is a machine that has different bits and you can put like wood and stuff in it and you put a pattern in it, it'll cut it out.
Yeah. To precision.
And I was super pumped. I got it all set up. It's incredibly hard to configure, and the Roland software is really strange. So I got everything set up, and I fire this thing up, Patrick. It is so, and I'm cutting acrylic plastic. It's so loud.
Oh, right? Man.
Like, I can't even talk to my students.
Yeah.
And then you could go out in the hallway, and everybody could hear it. Like it was, well, it was small, know? Man. It was the size of like an iMac Blueberry, like one of the older iMacs.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't even big.
And, oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
It needed its own room just for the sound, so we couldn't almost never run it.
Man, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, so that's why like CNC machines or cutting machines, they need to be basically in their own spaces, away from like classrooms where you can just generate tons of sawdust, tons of plastic bits. And, you know, they're the types of machines that once they start going, you definitely can't have people like with their hands around them at all, the small ones or the big ones. They're definitely dangerous. They're amazing. Like, in Shanghai, I saw one and they used it to cut out a canoe.
Wow.
So, yeah, but wow. Like, my point is you don't actually have to build a huge canoe to learn anything.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to build and prototype and try to invent things and get your ideas like out and into the real world, you don't need that for the prototype.
This seems very accessible too. Like none of this stuff, a lot of this you can pick up at your local hardware store. Yeah. And some of the brands you have on there, like Dremel, they seem very open to education and give education pricing. So that's good.
Yeah.
I like this.
So anyway, I hope that this helps people. The last item on the list, 8 strong magnets per table. So why do you need magnets?
Yeah.
If you have to glue stuff together, you either have to hold it, put it in a vise, or use magnets to make it stick while it's drying.
So
if you get strong magnets, you can sit something upright and put magnets around its base or wherever the glue is, and they will hold it until the glue dries.
Nice.
Yeah. I learned that at like a kind of professional maker lab, like STEM lab. And they were building some models, like, you know, prototypes, and they were just using glue, like wood glue. And they're like, yeah, you know, we found that magnets work better because vices are usually, it's easy to tighten a vise too much and it'll break the model.
Yeah.
And obviously nobody wants to hold it, but other forms of weight aren't consistent, like putting books on things and stuff like that. So when they use magnets, they know how much pressure, how many magnets, etc. So that was something I learned from people who do this kind of stuff every day. And it's simple to buy 8 strong magnets.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our agenda. I don't think we have anything else.
Nope. I think that's it.
Nice. And we ran a little longer than normal, but I think it was a good show nonetheless. So are we ready to wrap things up?
I think so.
All right. So for IT Babble, I am Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Keep on babbling out there.